The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
We are back this weekend, ready to preview a number of games on hand in college football. And joining us right now is Jason Peter, our three-time national champion at the University of Nebraska. Jason, it's great to have you with us, and we've got a number of games to hit on, but we're going to go straight to your heart, and that, of course, is talking about your Nebraska Cornhuskers. What in the world? I know you guys came away with a win against Fresno State, but were you pleased with the performance?
Yeah, the vibe in Lincoln is not good right now. I think going into the season, and we talked about it numerous times, I think there were a lot of question marks with the offense. So people have kind of expected that. They've been, I think, disappointed because there was a lot of talk and a lot of hope and a lot of expectations for this new offense under new coordinator Tim Beck. But I think the surprise of Saturday's game against Fresno State was the defense, and they just did not show up, and it's uncharacteristic of a Bo Pelini team. I think since he's been the head coach at Nebraska, there's been two games where Nebraska's defense has not been competitive, and that was in 2008 down in Norman, which I witnessed firsthand from the sidelines. I think Oklahoma put 24 points up within the first 4 minutes of the game.
Wow.
And it ended up being just a massacre down there. And then a few weeks after that, Missouri came into Lincoln and spanked the Huskers pretty bad. But yeah, I mean, when you think of this offense and kind of the old days and the grinding it out and 3 yards in a cloud of dust, Nebraska's not that offense anymore. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that used to sit in the stands back in the 90s when we'd be up by 30 or 40 points and Tom Osborne was still running the option, and you could hear them as you sat on the bench there on the sidelines, you could hear them say, "Why don't you just pass the ball, Tom? Pass the ball." And now, you know, fast forward 15 years, now people are yelling, "Just run the ball. Why can't we run the football?" So it's funny, it's sad because the lack of production on offense, but it is somewhat funny.
You know, lack of production offensively, but also you kind of, you know, we're talking about a non-conference game. You're playing Fresno State. Jason, you're a former player, national champ, played in the NFL. I mean, we know this as former athletes, that you play sometimes to the level of your competition, or perhaps did they overlook Fresno State?
I would like to think that they didn't overlook. This team isn't good enough to overlook. I don't think they've been good enough since Bo has gotten here, but let's face it, you rank a team in the top 10, in the top 15, you're talking about 18, 19-year-old kids that have a sense of entitlement showing up on campus and wearing a certain helmet, whether it's Oklahoma or Nebraska or Florida State or Texas. They show up and they think, "I play for Nebraska. We're going to walk out on this field, and the other team's just going to lay down." That's, you know, the craziest way of thinking, because if anything, teams are going to show up more because they want to knock the big guy off his horse. And that's what Fresno did. Do I think that they played down to their level? Somewhat, but I just think Fresno outplayed them. Plain and simple. I mean, there was nothing fancy about what Fresno did. They ran traps. They ran power Gs. They ran wham plays with the fullback. They ran counters, play action, naked boots. They just, you know, were solid on special teams, other than they gave up a 100-yard kickoff return to the Huskers. But other than that, you know, they scored on special teams. They did a good job in all three phases of the game. And as a former lineman, a defensive lineman, the way that we always thought about it was we don't even need the seven guys behind us. We're going to win the game by ourselves up front, because if they try to run the ball, we're going to stuff the run. If they try to throw the ball, one of us is going to get to the quarterback, or one of us is going to put enough pressure on the quarterback that he's going to throw a bad ball. So in our minds, we wanted it all. We wanted the weight of this game on our shoulders. And the way that this defensive line played on Saturday, it was bad. I mean, this, you know, playing against power G's and counters and traps, that's day one stuff. I mean, this is stuff that, you know, when I coached high school football, my defensive tackles knew that if the guard who was lined up in front of me, if he passed set, and the tackle and the center that are lined up adjacent to him, if they fired off the ball, blocking for a run, I knew that the guard from the other side was going to come and trap me. So I needed to put on the brakes, and I needed to come back underneath that guard pulling and kind of wrong shoulder it. And this defensive tackle, not both of them, but one in particular, I won't mention names, but he just kept running up the field. You know, the defensive ends, when, you know, the tackle or the tight end, when they all block down away from you and you see a guard coming the other way who's going to try to kick you out, you got to go down there and blow him up. You can't wait for that guard to come to you. You've got to go take the hit to him. And it just seemed like they had never even worked on this stuff. And they outworked them. They out-hustled them. Fortunately for Nebraska, they ended up with more points, though, somehow. You know, it was a tale of two halves when it came to the offense, and that's kind of what saved them.
You know, Jason, this is just a suggestion, but perhaps you need to huddle up with the defensive coordinator, Carl Pelini, and go in that locker room and share some of these things with some of the guys.
You know, it's one common theme that everybody says about not just Bo's teams, but about Bill Callahan's teams. And I think, you know, I'm not going to talk for other schools, but when we would come out of the tunnel prior to the game starting, you had all 150 guys that sprinted from the tunnel to that sideline. And you got in one kind of final big group, and you know, there was one leader in the middle, and we were kind of rallying the troops one more time before we go out onto that field. And now it's like guys are walking to the sideline. Guys are just, you know, all lackadaisical, just walking and, you know, stroll like they're going for a Sunday stroll. And it's embarrassing. It's, you know, you've got to be dialed in from the moment you step out onto that field till that final whistle. And sometimes you just don't get that. You can't have that just when the Oklahomas or the Texases or the Ohio States or the Wisconsin, you can't have that just for those games. It's got to be every single game. I mean, you know, and it's sad because I know I've lived it. And every other player that has gone through college football has lived it, and they know. You get 13 weeks out of 52. 13. And I know when you're in the middle of it and it's, you know, week two or week four, or week eight, whatever, sometimes it just gets repetitive and it's like, oh, the same old thing. But when you're finished and you look back, it's like, gosh, how could this person not have busted their butt for 13 weeks?
Absolutely.
It's just sad.
Well, the mindset better change, because now you guys have Washington this weekend, and stopping the run, that's got to be at the forefront of y'all's mind, and running back Chris Polk.
He did a number to them last year.
Yeah, he's special. You know what's interesting, too, let me jump in here, is the fact you guys are going to be, you've played Washington, this will be the third time in 12 months, is that correct?
Yeah, third time in 12 months, and that's a topic that people are talking about. Do you think that's going to play a role? Do you think Nebraska is not going to be as fired up to play them a third time in 12 months? If they're not fired up after the tail whooping that Washington gave them in the Holiday Bowl, I don't know what it's going to take then to get this group fired up, and especially coming off of that game to Fresno State. If it was me, I'd want to go out and prove something. I would want to go out and say...
That's what I'm saying. You got to get in that locker room and talk to these guys. You're such a great motivational speaker, too.
You know, that performance that we gave the prior week, that's not how this team wants to be remembered. So, yeah, Washington, I mean, they don't have Jake Locker. He's off to the NFL, but they still have a good group of kids. They haven't been real impressive in their two victories. I think Eastern Washington and Hawaii, and both times the opponent put up some points on them. But you know, Steve Sarkisian is a good coach, and he's got a good coaching staff, and they're going to put together a game plan. And if you don't come ready to play, hence you know the Fresno State game, anything can happen. I mean, that's why they play the games.
Okay, now let's talk about some positives. I don't like to be negative at all, but one of the things coming out of that game, even against Fresno State last weekend, the wide receiver Jamaal Turner, I mean, he's what, a true freshman, and he really exemplified some good plays.
Yeah, he was a kid that came in as a quarterback, and, you know, they're just, I don't think there was going to be a whole lot of opportunity for him to play at this point, but they wanted to get him on the field. So they had him move out receiver, and he's just one of those kids that's an athlete. And you know, it's one thing to have success at a Fresno State. It's another thing when you're doing against another school that's got equal speed, equal talent on the other side of the ball. And whether Washington is a dominant team or not, they still have kids that can run on the other side of the ball. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, the passing game, they came out in the second half and they were able to move the ball, throwing the ball, and they kind of used the pass to open up the run a little bit. Usually it's vice versa, and you run the ball to open up the pass, but, you know, football has changed over the last 10, 15 years, and I know that's kind of a motto that a lot of coaches take in the ball games, is that we're gonna stretch that defense in order to run it. With Nebraska, you've got a lot of people that still don't believe Taylor Martinez can throw the football. So you're still going to get, I think, a lot of teams that are going to crowd the line of scrimmage. They're going to put 8-9 guys in the box, and they're going to come after him and say, if you're going to beat us, you're going to beat us with your arm. And last week in the second half, they ended up connecting on a few deep balls. Can you hang your hat on that at the end of the day? I don't think so. But it's a start. I think it gives a kid who probably lacked a lot of confidence going into the season, no matter what the coaches were saying, no matter what his teammates were saying, no matter what he was saying, you don't get that confidence back until you go out and execute on the field.
Right.
And this wasn't against a top 10 defense. It wasn't against probably even a top 50 or 75 defense, but at least he was able to go out and start the process. Now, if he's able to do it against Washington, again, you're not going to get a top 50 probably defense, but at least now you're doing it against a team that has some decent speed on the other side of the ball.
So, but how critical is that? You're talking about just that confidence that he's got to have, because when you start looking up and down your schedule for Nebraska, I mean, yeah, Washington Saturday, but on the road at Wyoming, and then on the road at Wisconsin, and then here, your celebrity golf tournament coming up, Ohio State at home. This schedule right now, these next couple of games, aren't going to get any easier, Jason.
No, it's not. It's only going to get tougher from here on out. And if you have a quarterback that lacks confidence, forget about it. Forget about it. Just
look at the problems Texas is having right now, you know.
I know. Now they've got two first-string quarterbacks down there, and the first-string guy is now third. But if you don't have that confidence in the huddle, if you don't have that confidence just in the quarterback himself, how in the world can you go out and run an offense like they're running here at Nebraska or in half of the schools in college today? I think the offenses have become so much more complex. And sometimes I think, you know, that can be kind of a burden as well, because you are dealing with 18, 19, 20-year-old kids that not only are, you know, having basically a full-time job with football, but they're also students. They also have girlfriends. They also have family. You know, there's a lot on these kids' plates. So when, you know, your
girlfriends are a priority, aren't they, Jason?
Well, you know what I mean, but it's for an 18-year-old kid.
Of course.
For us, you look back and you say, gosh, you know, you can't let that stuff kind of even creep into your mind. And, you know, that was kind of the way that I always, I didn't want that additional pressure or responsibility. You know, I just, you know, these kids nowadays, sometimes it's, you know, you see some of these stories they have on TV and, you know, high school kids breaking up with their girlfriends or boyfriends, and, you know, they're driving their cars in the walls. And, I mean, you know, it's crazy. It's they think they're married. And I know everything's so intense nowadays. It's only going to get tougher from here on out. And, you know, but the thing is, Nebraska doesn't need to put it all on Taylor Martinez's shoulders. Have a running game. Help him out. The best thing a quarterback can have is a running game. It really is. It will take the pressure off. It will open things up, you know, in other areas. It will make other teams say, we just can't dial in on Taylor Martinez. We've got to watch for the running back. And right now, they're not getting anything out of the offensive line. Rex Burkhead's the featured tailback. They have three true freshmen that are behind him, and none of them to this point have gotten quality reps.
What about Amir, though? Didn't he do pretty good?
Yeah, he's the kid that ended up taking the kickoff back
for 100 yards.
102 yards, yeah. Or whatever it was. But I'm talking about in the run game. None of them are getting good quality reps, and all three of them are those game changers, game breakers. You know, if they hit that hole and they get to that next level, they're going to hit their head on the goalpost. You've got to get another threat back there. But, you know, I mean, we could talk for hours on why is there three true freshmen tailbacks burning their red shirts if they're not going to get quality reps. That's a whole nother topic.
Absolutely. Hey, Jason Peter is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We want to direct you to his website, which is jasonpeter.com. He's got some great stuff on there. And, of course, go to our website, which is eradiosports.com. And, Jason, the time is just getting away from us. But quickly, what about a roster report update on Alfonso Denard? How's he doing? Because he's been out the first two games.
Yeah, and this is, I think, the coaching staff is very secretive when it comes to injuries.
Imagine that.
It's very New England Patriots. Very Bill Belichick. And, you know, I guess it's fine if you win games, but if you don't, the media, they feel like you lied to them. They feel like you're not being honest and truthful, and that's when a media can turn on you. And to this point, they have felt like, I think they've been lied to about Alfonso. We had heard at the start of the season it was just a minor thing. I think I had said that I had heard it was more of a hip injury, mm-hmm. which is crucial for a corner. I mean, you got to be able to turn and run and backpedal and do all that stuff. So if you've got a hip problem, that's going to slow you down big time. And you know, with the struggles they've had on defense, I think you can look at Alfonso not being back there and say, okay, I can understand maybe why they're having some issues here. You know, when you have two shut down corners that you can put out on an island and you can commit other guys to different areas, when you can do things with your safeties, that opens up the defensive playbook. But right now, they're always having to, you know, run cover two, or they always have to have help back there. They always are taking the safeties and having them help, you know, with some of those corners. So, when you get Alfonso back, it will be, I think, a big boost to this team, not just from a performance standpoint, but I also think from a leadership, because he's a guy that's been through it. He's a guy that is he's a stud. He's going to play on Sundays. He's going to be a high draft pick. And I think just for the other guys to know that they've got a guy like that back there, I think that boosts their confidence.
Jason Peter has been with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show with our Under the Helmet segment. And my final question, I've got to throw this in here. They've been talking so much about just the domino effect of what's happening within the Big 12 Conference. I mean, obviously, Texas A&M, they're wanting to move on to the SEC. And heard this on a radio station. They're saying, you know, it's not Texas's fault that everything's being dismantled, but Nebraska. What do you think about that, Jason P?
That's just comical. It's comical. It really is. Nebraska, it's easy, I guess, to point a finger at the guy who's already gone and off to greater things, I guess.
Because they were saying that you guys pulled the trigger too quick. I mean, you really didn't try to make it work, and you always felt, I don't know, disrespected. Disrespected was the word. Disrespected by Texas.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, without having, I think, the results of the Texas-Nebraska games play a role in my answers here, because I would like to think that I'm able to keep that out of my decisions and my answers.
You're journalistic, too, of course.
Yes. but it's comical to think that Nebraska, you know, is the cause of this. Greed ultimately is the cause of this, and it's funny because a lot of the other stuff that I read now from different areas, there was a guy from a paper down in Missouri who wrote last week about if we had all voted with Tom Osborne back in 1995, the year prior going into the Big 12, he said, we wouldn't be in this mess right now. And that's the truth. You know, when they decided that they were not going to include any of the history of the Big 8 into the Big 12, you know, that was a sign. When they decided that they were going to move the Big 12 offices from Kansas City down to Dallas, that was a sign. When they wanted to say no more rotating the Big 12 championship game, we just want it down in Dallas, that was a sign. And everybody, and I've said it before, everybody at the time looked at Nebraska and looked at the gap that we had created, especially in the Big 12, that everybody thought we need to vote against whatever Nebraska wants. Tom Osborne wasn't thinking at the time with his voting, what's best for Nebraska. He was thinking, what's best for this conference? Maybe some things are better for Nebraska. I mean, Nebraska always relied on Prop 48, the kids that didn't qualify academically coming into school, into college. Everybody voted against Nebraska on that. That was ultimately something that benefited the schools down south. You know, there aren't many junior colleges up here in Lincoln, but down in Texas and Oklahoma, and I know there's a good one in Kansas, that stuff I think is more available. But look, I mean, Nebraska wasn't asking for its own TV network. Nebraska wasn't saying we don't want to share revenue and stuff like that. I mean, this is stuff that is coming from Texas. But ultimately, you can't even blame Texas. You know who you can blame? Is Dan Beebe for letting Texas get away with it. That's where the big issue comes in. So you can point the finger at whichever school you want, but the reality is it should be pointed at one guy, and the one guy who runs that conference, and that's Dan Beebe.
You know, and it's so interesting now, too, with all the headlines and the rumors swirling around as far as, you know, what is going to be Oklahoma's move? I mean, because obviously it's not definite right now, but are they heading out west? Geographically, I mean, I would love for us to be back with you all up in the Big Ten Conference. It just would certainly make a whole lot of sense and get locked into a long-term agreement because, you know, it was interesting. I was at the TCU press luncheon this Tuesday, and one of the things Coach Patterson talked about is, He's been coaching, what, 14 years, 11 years as the head coach. He said, this is the fifth conference we've been in while he's been there as a coach.
Yeah, it's sad. But it seems like they're going to these super conferences. And you know, to hit on the point that you had mentioned with Oklahoma, and I wish they would come to the Big Ten. Unfortunately, it seems like Oklahoma State's going to go wherever Oklahoma's going.
You'd think Bobby Stoops would want that too, don't you?
I would imagine that he would love to be part of the Big Ten. I don't think he is looking forward to, you know, three and a half hour flights back on Saturday night, you know, playing conference games out on the West Coast. I think it's much more doable.
But I'm saying he's a Midwest boy too, you know, that kind of thing.
Youngstown,
how
Ohio
cool,
guy.
Right?
I mean, to be able, you know, him and Bo Pelini grew up on the same block. Those guys, those families were good friends, but but it's funny because, you know, people pointing the finger at Nebraska. Bob Stoops came out just a week or two ago and asked if what would the impact be if there wasn't an Oklahoma-Texas game, and he said, you know, Oklahoma will live on. That's not the biggest thing in the world if we're not playing Texas again.
Yeah, that made
some
sure
part of it. Is some of these coaches look at this thing and say, if there wasn't maybe such greed, maybe this thing wouldn't have broken down. Maybe Oklahoma, even though they're not playing Nebraska every single year, maybe they at least would still have the opportunity to play them every other year, you know, the way that it's set up now, or the way that it was set up. So it's unfortunate no matter which way you look at it, but ultimately, when you look at the conferences that are still intact, the one thing they all have is good leadership at the top and the guy that runs the conference. And when you look at the conferences that have broken up, there's usually bad leadership. And ultimately, I think that's what you have here with the Big 12.
Always providing outstanding insight, our good friend Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. And Jason, always a pleasure. We hear from so many of our fans that enjoy having you on our program every single week. So you got a lot of fans down here in Texas.
Well, I appreciate it, Alyssa. I love it. And hopefully you guys are enjoying that little break in the weather you got down there.
We are. Yeah, I went out and jogged 10 miles this morning. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I don't know if I could do that.
All right. Okay, thanks, Jay. We'll talk to you next week. Take care. We're going
to
step aside much more straight ahead. Here in just a moment, we'll be visiting with Bill Glass, former NFL defensive end standout turned evangelist. We will be right back. Support for programming comes from Pinnacle Bank, where serving customers beyond day-to-day transactions is the Texas way. Pinnacle Bank provides solutions based on local needs and personal relationships. And at Pinnacle Bank, we think that's the way banking should be. Visit us online at PINNBANKTX.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews. Beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we want to welcome you back this weekend to our show. And I must share with all of you listening this weekend, I was so blessed to meet and have the opportunity to listen to former NFL standout Bill Glass at the Petroleum Club in downtown Fort Worth earlier this week. He certainly did talk about his journey in sports, but also his ministry. And just as a former professional athlete, just how that's really given him such a tremendous platform to influence others in his prison ministry. It's such a pleasure to welcome into our program former defensive end Bill Glass, who played 11 seasons in the NFL. And oh, by the way, he is a Baylor Bear. And it was an All-American there, too. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
How are you, Elissa?
I am doing fantastic. And, you know, before we just kind of reflect back on your illustrious career in the NFL, and we also want to hit on and talk about your ministry, which obviously is at the forefront of your focus right now, give us some thoughts about those playing days in Waco, Texas, and Baylor, because obviously they had a bye last weekend, but they opened their season against TCU. But your thoughts and how do you think that they will do this year?
Well, they looked really great against TCU. I was really proud of them. Been a long time since we've had a real winner at Baylor. When I was there, we won the Sugar Bowl and beat Tennessee substantially in the Sugar Bowl, and we had a great team at that time, and through the years we've been ups and downs, but now it's looking good.
Well, and I'm certain that what excites perhaps you the most about the program is Robert Griffin III. I mean, what a dynamic and explosive player that has a very promising future. What are your thoughts on him?
Well, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. If he keeps playing like he did at the end of the TCU game, he'll be a Heisman Trophy winner.
Bill Glass is with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show, and obviously you had a very successful time at Baylor University. As I said, you were an All-American, also a member of the College Football Hall of Fame. I hesitate to ask you, Bill, you know, what years did you play, but what perhaps is that most memorable play that you had during your time there?
Of course, we won the Sugar Bowl in 1957, the first day of 57, and we had a real good year that year. We didn't win the conference, but we went to the Sugar Bowl and beat Tennessee, number two team in the nation, substantially in the Sugar Bowl. So it was a great time at Baylor. Since that time, they've had their ups and downs, but we really thought they looked great against TCU.
And I know you're from the state of Texas. Did you get a lot of scholarship offers? How did you come to the decision that you wanted to have your playing career at Baylor University?
Well, yes, I had invitations to go almost anywhere I wanted to in those days, but I always kind of leaned toward Baylor, and I knew I was probably going to be in some form of Christian service, and Baylor was a Christian school, so I decided to go there, and glad I did.
You know, and one of the things that you had shared earlier in the week at your speaking engagement, you talked about your story, and as a young boy growing up, that you had to deal with some tough times and some adversity. You'd lost your father at a very tender age, only 14 years old, had a tremendous impact on you. But my question to you is, how did you get through that, you know, during that time? I mean, was football your sanctuary?
I had a great coach, Elisa, like a lot of people do, and he was reared in the Messiah Come in Fort Worth, so he had no mother or father. They were killed in an auto wreck when he was just an infant. So he really just kind of took me on as his son, and he would stay out every day after work out with me and work on my defensive fundamentals. And he taught me great fundamentals, great basic football defensive play. And I was small and slow and had no potential, but because he stayed out with me and spent a lot of time with me after workouts and rode with me on the bus going out to the games and really kind of fathered me, it really brought me out of it. And then when I gained size and speed and agility, I gained 6 inches and 60 pounds in 1 year.
Oh, my goodness.
And, lifting weights, we'd lift weights together every day. And so, you know, he was like a father to me. And I always appreciate him for that. And I've always had a substitute father since my dad died. And I think coaches really fill that role about as good as any one profession there is. I know a lot of players play for coaches who are kind of father them, because a lot of the kids that did great in sports had no good father, or the father deserted them, or father died like mine did. So as a result, they gravitate toward the father figure, which is the coach, and he has a great impact in their lives, and mine certainly did.
Well, he really did. He filled the gap for you, and obviously, as you had just said, Bill, I mean, you're talking about just the impact, profound impact that he had on your life. Tell me this. I mean, you had a very successful career at Baylor University. Then you went on to play 11 seasons in the NFL. That's not an easy thing to do. I believe your first team you played for was the Detroit Lions, and then you really had a lot of success with the Cleveland Browns. What was that experience like, and was that particular coach, did he kind of continue to mentor you along the way?
Not really. After my high school days, I got so immersed in pro ball that I kind of lost touch with him. But then he died early, and so I found me another substitute father, and that's the guy that stuck with me for 50 years. His name was Fred Smith. But the coaches have always been very important to me. I had a great coach at Cleveland by the name of Lawton Collier, and also Paul Brown before that. And so, you know, I've always had some kind of father substitute in my coaches, and it really is important for a boy or a girl, anyone, to feel that they have someone to look to in that father position. Of course, mothers are important too, but I think fathers play a great role in human stability, in confidence, and also a very great role in how you get along with God, the Heavenly Father. You know, you can't really have a good relationship to your Heavenly Father if you don't have a good relationship to your earthly father, or at least it's tough.
The title of Bill Glass's brand new book is Blitzed by Blessings, and we want to encourage you guys to go out and get a copy of that. You can go to Bill Glass's website, which is billglass.org, or you can email him at billg@billglass.org. And we are so short on time. I'm going to invite you back because I really want to kind of go through just the career that you have had. But tell us about the prison ministry and what you are doing now.
I found in prison a group of guys that not only did not get blessed by their fathers, they got beaten or abused or deserted, and as a result, they have a terrible vacuum in their heart, a great hole in their heart that can never be filled unless they get a substitute father. And one of the things I do is I take teams of athletes into prison. You know, some of the great athletic stars of all times have gone with me, Michael Jordan, Roger Staubach, Tom Landry, Reggie White, all kinds of great stars go with me into the prisons and share their faith and talk about their sport. But also we take in there hundreds of what we call teammates. These are just laymen who go with us, and they become the father or mother substitute to the inmates. And those inmates really gravitate toward those individual counselors who go with us and become many times a father substitute figures for the rest of their life.
Well, it certainly is a tremendous ministry, and we really salute you and continue to wish you all of God's very best. And Bill, you got to promise me that we're going to have an opportunity to visit some more. Thank you so much. And again, we want to encourage all of you that are listening today to go to billglass.org, or you can email them to get a copy of this brand new book titled Blitzed by Blessings. You can email him at billg@billglass.org. Bill, thank you so much, and good luck this weekend.
God bless.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.